Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
I'm David. I'm an alcoholic. Guys, that's always weird when that happens. Okay, so I'm supposed to talk about service and being a young person and all that stuff. When I got to AA, I was destroyed. I had spent the last year pretty much isolating myself, trying to quit drinking on my own without any help. And any feeling of usefulness or value was pretty much gone. And I knew that I was an alcoholic, even though I hadn't really had somebody sit me down and talk to me about exactly what that might mean. But I knew that I couldn't quit, and I knew that when I drank, it was always terrible. So I made a decision as soon as I got to AA that I was going to do whatever it was that you guys told me to do. But at the same time, I had this feeling like maybe I wasn't bad enough. Not that I wasn't an alcoholic, but then maybe you guys just wouldn't let me stay because I didn't have enough arrests, I didn't have enough crazy stories, I didn't have enough whatever, because, I mean, I was 27 when I got sober, and I'd never been arrested, and I, you know, hadn't crashed a car, I hadn't gotten a DUI, I hadn't done all the other stuff that the crusty old-timers were talking about all the time. So I had this fear that if you guys found out what was really going on with me, you'd tell me, hey, get out of here, you're not bad enough. And so on a lot of different levels, I needed to be put back together and shown some kind of something to do so that I could feel like I belonged and like I had some kind of value. And a whole lot of that happened in getting a sponsor and working the steps. But you can only do that so fast. So in the meantime, they gave me stuff to do. And it started with wash the ashtrays. And I would go and wash the ashtrays. I don't know why these crazy Cracker Barrel eating ice cream, eating smoking coffee, drinking crazy people want me to wash the ashtrays, but I'd made a decision I'm going to do whatever they tell me to, so I did it. And I would do that and feel like maybe I have a little bit of use in the world. And it just went on and on from there. As soon as I had enough time to chair meetings, they had me chair meetings, and that was a big thing. Because like Cushing was talking about, it stopped being your meeting that I come to, and it started being our meeting that we do together. And I really, really needed that because it helped me get over that fear that you guys were going to tell me to leave or something. Which I is now, it's just my crazy alcoholic mind trying to get me out of the rooms. I was lucky that I was in a group where service was something you were expected to do, or at least in the little corner of the group that I was involved with. I was also lucky that there were a lot of young people who were already involved in service. So it was not uncommon to go to a business meeting and half the people there were young people. And so when I got a year and was eligible to take a service position, I did, which was great. I'm really glad that I did that. But I pretty promptly started turning it into something it's really not supposed to be. I wanted everyone to think that I was doing everything right. And one way to ensure that was to be on the, you know, trusted servant board on the, you know, it's, your name's written on the wall. You must be important, right? And to show up at all the business meetings and to do all the right stuff. And I started saying yes to everything and doing everything I could possibly do. Which, don't get me wrong, that did not hurt me. It did not hurt me. Even if I was doing it maybe for the wrong reason sometimes. I got to know all of the people that are involved in that. And I had excuses to go to area assembly and find out what that's all about. And I knew who to talk to if I had a question or a problem about something because I'd met all those people through doing all the service work. So it was awesome. Somewhere around that time, I went to my first WIPA, which I thought was stupid. We went up to Tikipa, and there were a bunch of us that were young from my home group, which is kind of a conservative home group, and we were like, all this chanting is dumb. These people don't respect the traditions. And we kind of sat in the back and grumbled, oh, you know. But through doing that, I met some of the people that were really involved in that, and I got to know those people, and I would go visit them at their home groups in Tennessee. And this one guy in particular was the most loud, obnoxious, crazy guy in the whole WIPA. And I went to his home group one night for his birthday, and he was the nicest, most straightforward, talking to newcomers, great guy. Like, he knew everybody's name and would welcome people in. And I saw that all the silly stuff that was happening at the YPAWS was just silly stuff that happens at YPAWS. And that the people that were really involved in those were people who were doing good, solid, serious AA at their home groups. And so I started thinking, well, maybe this YPAW thing isn't such a dumb idea. And around that time, the Tennessee people started talking to us saying, you guys should have a YPAW. There was this weird guy that would come up to us and say, God's been talking to me about Alkipaw for 10 years, whatever he would say. And I thought it was kind of dumb, but like I said, I was signing up for everything. I was getting on every panel I could possibly get on, so why not take this thing on too? So I started talking to people. We made these dumb pink flyers and started taking them everywhere. And it got to be an excuse to just go to all the different groups in North Alabama and talk to people. And find young people who were here, there, and everywhere, kind of off by themselves in these smaller groups, and just tell them, hey, there's young people. We didn't even have any events at that time. We just had a flyer, like, hey, get in touch with us. And somebody hatched the idea that maybe this would be easier if we had a young people's meeting. And I don't know whose idea this was, but we did it the right way, I think. We started out by getting together all the young people that were active in service, and we sat down and we kind of had a business meeting, which is a kind of a weird way to start a meeting. But what it meant was that no one person was in charge. We were all doing it together, and there never was the idea that anybody had to, like, run the thing. We just sat down and talked about what we thought would be a good idea and had votes on it, and as a result of that, we ended up starting this young people's meeting. And I think at the time, I wasn't really sure if that was going to be okay because it was really attached to my home group and I thought it was kind of weird. But, you know, over the years, having watched that group grow and get stronger and stronger, you know, there's that moment where you see somebody come in and get a sponsor and get started because they feel comfortable there. And, you know, I get to see that and realize that all the work that we did to make that possible was for that moment. You know, in my personal opinion, there's one reason for all this service stuff, and it's to facilitate 12-step work. You know, that's why we're doing all of it. But I, you know, couldn't just be a part of that group. I also had to have a service position there. So I have a service position at my home group, and you know, I always have a service position at the Young People's Group, and then we started working on the Alkipaw Conference thing, and I had to be at every single one of the fundraisers and on all of the committee meetings to get that done. And, you know, I think for a while I had this idea that if I didn't do some of these things, they weren't going to get done, so I had to. And that is a terrible way to approach things. I do not recommend that. And I did that for maybe a year, and it got to where every weekend I'm at a conference trying to, you know, spread the message about what we're doing. You know, three or four nights a week, I have some kind of meeting I have to go to try to, you know, be on all these little committees. And, you know, at the same time, I'm having a life outside of AA as minimally as I possibly can. And I'm going to a meeting every day and I'm sponsoring people and I have a sponsor. And then I have my family and then, and all of a sudden there's no time to do anything but AA, go to school, sleep. That's all I'm doing. And so I was really surprised when this girl that I was seeing broke up with me because I hadn't seen her in a month because I'd been out of town, you know. And it's just like, you know, sometimes you get those disappointments in sobriety that are like a kick in the chest. It was one of those. And so I'm really mad. I'm really torn up. And I go to my home group and everybody can see that I'm just messed up about this. And all of a sudden, all these old timers are there to pull me aside and say, hey, you're not doing this so that you can be in every AA meeting. You did not do all this step work and I'll get better so that you could be awesome in AA. You did all this stuff so that you can go out and give something to the world around you. And if all you ever do is AA, then you're missing it. And I was like, where were you guys all this last year? All I did was AA, and you patted me on the back and said, don't ever say no. And they were there, and they were telling me these stories then. I just wasn't ready to hear it. So I had to make some decisions about what I could really actually do and do well. And naturally, being an alcoholic, I swung the pendulum the other way. And I just quit doing all this stuff. I said, oh, I don't want to do any of it. And that wasn't good either. I didn't like that. It didn't work out. I didn't like it. I didn't have to get drunk over it or anything, but it was not the right thing to do. So at this point, I've gotten to something I feel like is a reasonable medium in the middle, where I'm a trusted servant at my home group. I chair some meetings. I do all the normal Stepwork stuff and sponsor people. I talk when people ask me to talk, but I don't have to be on everything. And it's been really a beautiful experience to step away from some of those things that I was doing and watch those gaps get filled in. Because I was absolutely wrong in thinking that if I didn't do it, it wasn't going to get done. You know, if anything, I was taking up a chair that somebody else could have had. And when I walked away from a lot of that stuff, all these people came in. And it's been just great to watch people come in and you know, take that stuff up and do it and get it done. I went to we had our first AlcuPop conference, and I went to that kind of as like I hadn't been on the committees for a while, and I wasn't really that involved, and I got to sort of be an Indian and not be a chief, and it was great. You know, you guys did a wonderful job. Everything was perfect, and I just got to be there and enjoy it, and that was great, because for a couple of years, every event that I went to, I had some responsibility I had to take care of, and I had to make sure, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, thanks, you guys, and that's all I got.
Thank you. I'm Meredith, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Meredith. We love you, Meredith. Lots and lots and lots.
How much?
Thank y'all. I drove up from Birmingham today. Don't know most of y'all in the room. You know, when Latham got in touch with me, it was through a friend of ours, Chuck, and who is very involved. You know, asked if I would do this, and you know, I was told a long time ago also, if they ask, they ask. That has also gotten me into a heap load of trouble with way too many responsibilities in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because what you find out is Alcoholics Anonymous isn't different than any other organization. About 10% of the people do 95% of the work. And that's just the way it is. You know, if we were any different than anywhere else, you know, I'd be surprised. Thank God for those that will do. Because oftentimes these are very, you know, people don't know the work that goes into a lot of the things. And there's a lot of stuff that has to be done to make something come off. I mean, just to have a meeting, just to start a meeting, to start a young people's group. I did that in Birmingham. It was a ton of work. There were many nights that the three of us sat there and looked at each other week after week after week and said, is this thing ever going to take off? Are we ever going to have a young people's group? And we did. We had a young people's group, and it was wonderful. But people didn't know what we went through, you know, trying to get that off the ground. It was, you know, a lot of people said, oh, young people's group, what do y'all know about sobriety? You know, y'all don't know anything about sobriety. Y'all can't really have a real group. You know, we did. We had an excellent group. I came, when you said you were 27 and young coming in, I was 17 the first time I came to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. So I was quite young. Then I was 19 when I got involved in AA, when I got sober. The biggest difference, I too had a lot of people that we had seemed like a real influx in Birmingham around 1990 of young people coming into AA. I mean, we were just tons of us. And we would disrupt groups a lot, sit in the back and, you know, not really pay attention to what was going on and laugh and things like that. There's only, after 20 some odd years, there's only three of us that are left that I know that are sober. And not necessarily continuous sobriety. but are still in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's only three of us out of probably about 15. Those odds are not very good. Some are dead. And I think one of the biggest differences is the three of us that are still involved in AA and still around, we've all done service work. We've all been involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. We had a clubhouse in Birmingham. I guess we still do, but we used to have a clubhouse in Birmingham. It burned, for those of you that don't know the history of the Five Points group in Jaffe. The house burned several years ago. A drunk was upstairs and fell asleep with a cigarette and burned the place down. But, so now we just have this little building that we meet in. But, our intergroup office used to be in the same area. Our house was here in the little building, and the intergroup office was in the back. I was unemployable when I came in. Didn't have a car, had wrecked my car, all this. So I used to get up in the mornings and call down to Jaffe and get someone to come pick me up at my parents' house and come and take me down to Jaffe for the day. And I would sit down at Jaffe all day long. And I'd go over to Morris's office. He's our intergroup rep. He runs intergroup. He still does to this day. And I would go back in Morris's office, and I'd start vacuuming. I'd start putting books up on the shelves. Morris smoked a whole lot back then. He had several ashtrays all over the place, and I'd empty his ashtrays and do this, and he's a complete slob, and there'd be stuff all over the place, and I'm a little OCD, so I would be cleaning and cleaning and cleaning, and one day I said to him, I said, Morris, what does this have to do with sobriety? He says, are you drinking? I said, no. He says, keep cleaning. You know, it was one of those little things that I felt like if I didn't go down to Morris's office every day, the place wouldn't get cleaned. So I had to get up and go down there and take care of Morris. And I didn't have to do that. You know, that was, Morris had obviously lived a very long life before I came along. And intergroup had obviously survived just fine without me. But I took on that response. But it was something I needed to do. I needed a reason to get up in the morning. I needed a reason to get dressed, shower, all those things that I previously wasn't doing when I was drinking. And I felt like I was a part of. I felt like I was needed in some way. And I did the, you know, I came in when they were still smoking in meetings, and we cleaned ashtrays and set up coffee. And the first time I was asked, would I do the coffee? And this was a group that we had the big, old, you know, 64 cup, you know, coffee things. So you had to get there an hour before the meeting started to do the coffee. And so they had to give you a key to the place. And they gave me a key to the place so I could make coffee. That was amazing to me that somebody gave me a key to the place. I mean, I was about 6 months sober. And I thought, do these people have any idea who they're giving a key to? And they didn't, but that was okay. I was trying to live a sober life and live by the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous and not steal anything. And I didn't. But again, it made me responsible for something, and it was being responsible for something. Then came, you know, we're going to do Alki-Pop. This was in 1991, I believe, and we were going to do Alki-Pop. I had never heard of Alki-Pop. I had never heard of a young people's convention, nothing, knew nothing about it. So we said, okay, let's do Alki-Pop. And got on the committees and did all these things, did dances. Oh God, we did dances and we did these type of fundraisers, and it kept me busy. It kept me involved, and I met so many people because we did started going to Tiki Pa and some of the other ones. And I met people all over. And some of those people, I mean, I'm still friends with today that I met at some of those conferences 20 years ago. We still keep in touch. But I did those things, and it was exactly what I needed, because without being involved in Young People's Alcoholics Anonymous, again, I was 19 or 20 years old. I had just given up all my friends, everybody, because I wanted to be sober. And they told me, change your playmates and your playgrounds. And I was willing to do it. I was willing to change everything. And I thought, I looked around the rooms, and I have to tell y'all, I looked around and I said, there are a bunch of gray-haired, old, grouchy people. I don't know what I'm going to do. This is it. Boring and glum. That's it. I got no life left ahead of me. You know, I'm going to sit in here and drink cigarettes and smoke coffee and drink cigarettes. There we go. Smoke cigarettes and drink coffee until I turn into a prune and old age and I keel over from a heart attack one day. That's what's going to happen to me, you know. And if that wasn't the furthest thing from the truth, some of the old gray-haired men in this program and women in this program were the biggest advocates for the young people. We had a couple of gentlemen in Birmingham who, every chance they got, they were there for us. They promoted us, they helped us, they taught us things. You know, we knew nothing of the traditions. And if you do service work, you will break every tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous. I promise you. It's just the way it's going to be. And in doing that, you learn the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's no other way to do it except to get involved. You can go and sit in meetings all day long, even chair a meeting, and you will still not learn the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. The only way for me was to get involved and realize, we just broke that tradition, didn't we? Well, okay, maybe we'll do better next time. You know, and the next time, oh, we broke that tradition, didn't we? You know, maybe we'll do better next time. And little by little, we started to learn what Alcoholics Anonymous was about. And why, you know, I don't think people study traditions enough. I like traditions studies. And, you know, I now know why we not only have the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, but why we have the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, and why the 12 traditions are so important, and why in business meetings people get really upset because they don't want the traditions broken. Some people are very, very, you know, they're not going to let a tradition be broken. And there were times that we just didn't understand that. You know, what's the big deal? So what if, you know, we take outside money? You know, we need money. Don't we? We gotta survive. Alcoholics gotta survive. Why can't we take the money from this? Can't take outside money. And we didn't understand some of those things. We didn't understand why people were so adamant about not breaking the traditions. And it's because we want Alcoholics Anonymous to survive as Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't want it to become something else. I have been, again, you know, I did a bunch of the things, you know, can't even think of the what they are. It's been so long since I've done them. But I've been on different committees and, what is it, public relations committee and the one for corrections and all those. And I did a lot of, and I am so grateful that I did. I'm so grateful. When I was on the corrections committee, one of the things we did was we went down to the women's prison. We went to the Women's Work Relief Center. I'm sorry, the Women's Work Relief Center. That was one of our things that we did. And the first time I was going down there, I said, what am I going to say to these women? I have never been in the back of a police car. What am I going to say to them? How are they going to relate to me? And you know what? They related to me because they knew exactly where I had been. They knew those feelings. They knew those things that I had been through. They knew that incomprehensible demoralization that we talk about. Those were the things that stuck. It wasn't the fact that I had never been to jail. It wasn't the fact that I had never had the DUI. It wasn't those things. It was the differences. It was the similarities that we had. And I'm so glad that I did those things. Because what it sent home to me was, I go back out and drink again. You know where you're going. This is where you're going to end up. If you're lucky, this is where you're going to end up. But I was very, very involved for many years. And then I became very uninvolved for many, many years. I got married. I went about 6 years sober. I had my first child at 8 years sober. Had my second child at 10 years. Was moving around the country for my husband's job. We were moving from here to there and there to there. And I stopped doing service work. I stopped doing all of it because I had gotten all those things that Alcoholics Anonymous promised. I had everything that Alcoholics Anonymous promised me. And I said to myself, well, you know, it's time for somebody else to do it. I'm going to let them do it now. I've done my time. Thank you very much. I'm going to bow out. Well, I completely went the other direction and did nothing. And I was not happy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't feel a part of. I'd come into meetings, leave. That was it. I didn't do anything else. Didn't go to conventions, didn't meet people, didn't do anything, didn't talk to people, nothing. And I felt a real disconnect when I did that. I have, again, looking for that balance in my life. I'm on a couple of committees right now. When I'm asked to do something, I try to do it. I don't say yes every time anymore because I now look at the rest of my life that I have out there. I have two children that they don't come before Alcoholics Anonymous, but they rank right there with it. You know, I have to do Alcoholics Anonymous to be a good mother. Because without Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not a very good mother. But if I already have a commitment to my children, I don't say yes to Alcoholics Anonymous. If I already have a commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't say yes to my children. And those are the things that I look at today is how do I balance doing service work and going to meetings and working with a sponsor and sponsoring people and being a parent. And it's not an easy thing to do. Believe me, it was a lot easier when I was 19 and I had zero responsibilities in my life. Zero. First of all, nobody expected anything out of me because I'd been a drunk for so long. And I had no responsibilities to anybody. I had no career path. I had no children. I had no husband. I didn't even own a vehicle. I didn't live by myself. It was easy to just say yes to AA all the time. But now that there is that balance in my life, more so than probably ever before, I believe that I am now a productive, good member of society and a good AA member. And I think that's what I've been looking for a long time, is how to make those two things mesh together. And it's not always easy. You know, sometimes I sign up to chair a meeting, and you know what? Work comes along, and you know what? I can't just say to my boss, hey, I'm sorry, it's 5 o'clock. I'm chairing a 5:30 AA meeting. I need to go now. You know, you can't just say that to them. But I make a real point to really make an effort, if I sign up to chair a meeting, to be there. And if I'm not going to make it, then I call somebody to take my spot for me. You know, if I have other responsibilities to do, then I do them. And I believe that doing the service work in AA and knowing I need to show up for you guys has made me a better worker. Makes me say, you know what, when I tell my boss I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there. When I tell my parents I'm going to be someplace, I show up. And it's a direct result of you guys expecting me to show up when I sign up to chair that meeting, when I sign up to be on that committee, when I say I'm going to make coffee, that y'all actually, y'all thought I was going to be there. Y'all actually thought I was going to show up. And what I realized was, is I started showing up. And when I did that, I started showing up for life. So thank y'all.
Corey, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Corey.
Say it.
Love you, Corey. Lots and lots and lots.
How much?
It's nice to be here with y'all. I'd like to say I drove down here from Memphis, Tennessee, so I'm a little tired. Bear with me if I kind of nod. I want to start off saying my home group is the Fraser Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Memphis, Tennessee. I say that because it's a very service-oriented group, and it kind of is how I got into service. So I remember Latham saying that. I like what's been shared. I guess what I can really add to it is when I got here, I didn't think I could be useful to anybody. I never felt like I fit in. I had a lot of self-esteem issues and a lot of just insecurities about myself, and I was just so into myself, and I was miserable. You know, I didn't know about getting sober at first, but because I came here through treatment, and but I knew that just something wasn't right with how I felt and how I was living. So slowly I got willing to just say, okay, what can I do to get involved in this? It took a long time, but I think what was good is I was at a treatment center that would take us to all these AA events and all these AA meetings, and they would like directly put us to an old timer that would have us shaking people's hands. And I was like, why am I shaking this guy's hand? I don't know him. They have us getting coffee and pouring coffee during the meeting. And they have us emptying out ashtrays, taking out trash. And I didn't really understand it. And we also had chores at the house. You know, and I guess what's big for me is, like, when I got here, I wasn't very responsible. I wasn't very accountable. And I was so caught up in my head and just, man, thought storms everywhere, you know, that I didn't know how to just focus on one thing. And I guess about 6 months sober, I was in a halfway program, and I'd gotten to the point where it's like, okay, you know, I'm willing to do whatever they tell me to do. You know, it didn't start off like, okay, I want to do this. It was like, man, I don't feel like I have any other choice. You know, I'm just gonna do what they tell me to do and see what happens. And I just got to that point, I guess, where I was willing to just, I mean, I guess like they say, go through the, act as if I believe, you know, that this may work. So in doing that, I got into my fourth step, and then I was really in my head, man, and caught up in a lot of fear and had all these just, I see somebody I didn't even know and it reminded me of somebody back home, and I just get angry and just want to like crawl up, roll up in a ball, and there's an event going on, I don't know if y'all know about it, in Memphis called the Bluff City event, fellowship. I don't really remember how old it is, but it's been around a long time. And I had this old guy come up, that had seen me coming to different meetings and just kind of trying to get myself out there as far as my name out, because I was in a big city I didn't, you know, I'd never been to before recovery. And, he said, man, how would you like to come sell some t-shirts? And I was like, man, you're gonna like trust me with money? Like, you're gonna have me do this. I was like, okay. You know, and they told me, that if somebody asks and you have all this and you're available and you can make the commitment and stick to it, then do it. And I mean, I was at a halfway house connected to the treatment center, so I couldn't say, oh, well, I'm a little busy. I didn't have a job. So I did it. And, I remember that day I'd been writing on my four step and the guy came and picked me up and we went and started selling t-shirts. And just something about doing that, like, it's funny, I don't know, it's funny to me, it helped me out, because like there was t-shirts full, and we had all these white shirts, and they sold out like immediately, and all we had was pink t-shirts. So I'm sitting here selling these pink t-shirts, and like that old insecurity kind of like, man, I look like a douchebag, like selling all these pink t-shirts. So like the next thing I knew, I put this long sleeve pink t-shirt on, and I got up and I said, hey, real men wear pink, we're selling these shirts, come get a shirt. And something that did for me is like, man, I got just that insecurity of, man, what is somebody going to think of me? And it was like, man, I'm doing this because I was asked to do it. And so I started, so I did that. And, man, I met a lot of people. I got just more comfortable with being around people, period, without just like thinking like, what do people think about me? So I guess like going through, getting into service, like doing these different things in service, whether it be just taking out trash or whether it be picking somebody up, which people were picking me up, like got me out of my head and just kind of got me out of just like thinking about myself. They had me look at like what can I do for other people, or what, I mean, because I really didn't care about doing anything for y'all when I got here. That's just me, because I had a lot of, man, I had a lot of turmoil with myself. And I guess one of the big things service showed me, just like the simplest bit of service, was on page 54, where it talks about unmanageability to me. It says, we thought we could be, we were of no use to ourselves or anyone else. That's what it felt like. I just felt like I could not do anything right. And AA taught me slowly that just as long as I was just available, made myself available and willing to do it, that I could, man, that things wouldn't just like crumble around me. I could interact with people. I could do something for somebody. And then it started after a while, I've been sober, where it wasn't like I didn't feel like my motive wasn't, okay, if I do this for you, what am I going to get out of it? It's just, I got something out of doing it. I can't really put my finger on that. But, so then after doing that, I guess I'd gotten involved in my first home group, which wasn't Frazier at first, and I'd gotten into just chairing meetings, and so it gave me something to do. And then I guess when I get my first year, I celebrated my first year. It was the same weekend as Circuit Fall in 2011, and that was really big for me, because I went to this. I've been to young people's meetings, but I went to my first convention. And I picked up my coin around people, and tons of people my own age, younger, older. And it did something for me, because like, I didn't know how to like, really be around people my own age, sober. You know? Like, I was really shy, and I was really, like I said, I was really insecure. But for once I got there, man, I felt really good about it. You know, I felt like, man, you know, I can enjoy, I can have fun, and like, she said, It's not all gloom. Like, I can enjoy being sober. I don't have to put a drink in me. I don't have to be all worried about this. I can be myself, be my own age, and have fun with people my own age, and anybody, really. So then after that, I got after going to Second Claw, I came back and had the determination to get just more involved in young people's, because at that point I'd just been really involved in AA as a whole, but I felt like I was lacking unity with people my own age. I didn't really feel right around people. So what I did, what AA taught me, was to face that and put myself around them and just get over that fear of it, you know. And so I did that, and I was on the Tiki Paw Big Committee. And then now it was in Nashville. I guess it was the last weekend of March. March. Yeah, that's right. I think so. And we got we're hosting the convention this year, or in 2013. So man, I was really excited about that. I was like, it actually comes to Memphis, and we get an opportunity to pretty much just reach our hand out and share the message as it was to us. And so this year, I guess I've gotten really involved, almost like you said, too involved. I became the alternate achievement rep for my home group. I've been asked to be the alternate GSR, which I probably won't do because I'm also on the Grapevine Committee. And it's like, I'm the program chair for Tiki Paw, and then I have this event that I help out with that isn't even in AA, but it's a way for me to be of service just in like just the Memphis community, which I like doing. So it's like all this stuff that, like, I guess when I first got sober, it was like, I need to do this, I have to do it. And I guess just this last, I guess really 6 months, it's been like, well, it's good for me to be able to do this, but if I make a commitment to one and I can't keep it to another, I can make all these commitments, but I'm like, somewhere I'm not given all the time and all the commitment to that one. Because I'm spreading myself out too thin. And that way, I really was finding where I couldn't really show up where I said I was going to and be as responsible as I said with one, because I was trying to do it with all these others. So for me, it was just kind of like I was trying to manage, because I thought I had to get to stay sober. So yeah, I guess one thing that service has helped me do is it showed me that I can be a part of, and that I pretty much, you know, I can do these things. That I can be myself. I can enjoy sobriety. Like today, I pick people up, and sometimes I'll be like, man, I gotta pick this guy up. And I remember where when I was at a treatment center in a big city that I didn't understand, and I had these people that I didn't even know tell me, hey, I'm gonna come pick you up. And then they take me out to eat, and I was like, man, I don't have money, and they said, well, we're gonna get you some food because it was done for me. You know, so I had people that would share these experiences with me and share all this with me and show me how to do it. You know, and I was like, well, how can I repay that? How can I repay you? That's when I was sitting my first sponsor. And he told me, man, all you can do, or what you can do, is if you stay sober, do it for somebody else. And so that's the kind of mindset I've tried to keep, is like, because it was done for me and people showed me this care and this love, now I try to, if I can be fully committed to it, share that same companionship and that same love, and just share my experience, you know. Because I had people that didn't. I asked this guy's advice, and he said, "Man, I'm not gonna give you my advice. I'll share my experience with you, and show you what I can." And so today, that's what I try to do as far as being in service. I'm still really new at it. I see, like I said, I see a lot where I might be trying to spread myself out too thin sometimes. But I guess the main thing to show me is if I can be available, if I keep myself available and being willing to meet the commitment if I can, like actually be accountable to that. So that's really all I really want to share. Thank you all.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.